Bibles to Luke, the 15th chapter. We will continue our study from there this morning. As I mentioned in the first sermon, we see in this parable of the two lost sons, we do have these two brothers, and we focus a lot on the younger brother this morning. However, I mentioned the context of this parable, and that when we look in verses 1 and 2, we see the tax collectors and the sinners drawing near to Christ, and then the Pharisees and the scribes being nearby as well, listening to Christ and his what he was about to teach in the parables. And so we go through the context, and we have the first parable of the lost sheep, and we see the sheep being lost and it being returned and found. And then we have the parable of the lost coin and it being lost and it being found. And then we come to the parable of the two lost sons. And again, we have with the younger brother, we see something being lost, it being found, it being celebrated over. But we also have this additional element to this parable, that it doesn't end with the younger brother. And a lot of times, I'll make the case that we as Christians, we like to identify ourselves with the younger brother, that we identify in this feeling of being lost and the warm emotions that come, like when we look at with the sheep, everybody loves sheep, that they're cute little animals, that they're returned, that they're saved, that they're not lost, and that there are great feelings, and it is a great moment whenever someone who is lost is returned. However, with the context of who Christ is talking to and this additional element of the older brother, this parable leads me to believe it's more so about the older brother and his interactions with the father. And what we'll do in this second lesson is look at how the older brother acts and his interactions with the father. So let's begin by reading, starting in verse 25. Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing, and he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, "Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf, because he has received him back safe and sound." But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him, but he answered his father, "Look, these many years I have served you, and I never disobeyed your command. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends? But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, and killed the fattened calf, you killed the fattened calf for him." And he said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found." So as we start to look at the older brother and his actions towards the father, the first thing that we see is that this older brother is in the field and he's working, as would be expected of sons of this time, that there has to have been a good amount of time from when his younger brother had left in the beginning of this parable till now, that time has passed and life has gone on, that they have continued, and he's out in the field doing what you would have expected of a son. And as he comes back towards the house, all of a sudden he noticed, like we said earlier, that this would have been a big celebration. It wouldn't have just been the immediate family, that with the killing of the fattened calf, that the entire area would have known about this, and they would have come together to celebrate with the father and his joy over the younger son coming back. So from a distance, he probably hears noise, and he hears laughter, celebration, typical, I guess you'd say, party sounds. And he gets closer, and he starts to realize something's going on. But he probably has a clue of what's happening, that he can most likely look into the house and see in either the courtyard or wherever. We picture a lot of times that these houses were very square and rectangular, and they had open courtyards, and this would have been where this was going on, so he would have been able to see what's going on. He has a clue, but yet he calls one of the servants. Rather than rushing into the party, he calls one of the servants to him and asks him what's going on. And this servant begins to explain to him what exactly is happening inside of the house right now, and the fact that the younger brother has come back, and he explains his father's actions. And this is where we start to see the danger of the older brother and his interactions, and that his immediate response is that he's angry and he refuses to go in. I know for me, my sister, she goes to school in Iowa, and when she came home, I was very excited for her to be home. And I can't even imagine what it would have been like if for some reason had done what this younger brother had done, her being a sister, but if she had done something like this, and I thought that I didn't know if she was alive or not, and she comes back all of a sudden, then the joy and the feelings that naturally would come with that being your brother, who, for all you knew, he was dead. And that truly was the case of this. But yet, the joy that we would have, we believe, in our own lives. But yet this older brother, he gets angry in that he refuses to go into the party. And when we look at, again, the culture of this time, that would have been a very big insult to his father. That the fact that he refused to be there with his father, as the older brother, he was the bigger heir to his inheritance. That with this two-thirds, this also meant that he was more prominent in continuing the father's name, that he would have been the one to have inherited the majority of the property and everything, that he was, like we do with older brothers, that he was the first, that he would have been older and would have been working to take over for the father as we would say he was approaching retirement, that as he was getting to his older age, this older brother would have been the one who bared the responsibility of taking care of his father. But yet, he rejects that. And then in verse 29, we begin to see the this anger that he has with his father. As his father, another thing to note also is the fact that the father came out to him. It didn't take for the older brother going into the party, but the father came out to him to speak with him against the culture of the time. We don't have any notification or any, evidence that this was royalty. But if you think about it, with a king, if you came into a king's court, you wouldn't stop at the gate and say, "Hey, come to me." You would go into him and you would enter to him. But yet this father puts aside his own pride in the spot that he has as the head of this household and this patriarchal society, and he goes out to his son to deal with him. In verse 29, we have the first thing that the older brother really says to his father, and this is stemming from his anger, in that he says, "Look, these many years I've served you, and I never disobeyed your command, yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends." I'm no agricultural expert. However, I have tasted steak, and I enjoy steak, and I know the difference in cost between steak and goat. And it's an interesting thing that this older brother mentions, in that rather than he is upset about the fattened calf being killed, but at the same time, whenever he begins talking with his father, that he begins to compare his service to the father with his younger brother's, that he says that, "Well, my younger brother, he went off and he did all these things. I stayed here and I served you, and yet I never even asked for a goat," which would have, in comparison of cost, would have been a much lesser cost. It would have been a more common thing to have goats. Goats are a lot smaller, and that he wasn't even asking, or at least he appears, that's another thing important to note, is the fact that he wasn't even asking for the fattened calf. All he was wanting was a smaller amount than his younger brother. And so, in the next verse, in verse 30, probably the most disheartening thing about the interactions between the older brother and the father is the older brother's rejection of his family, the rejection of his brother especially, and that he says, "But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property." As we saw with the younger brother who rejected his father by saying, "I want my share of the property now," rather than waiting for it whenever he would have passed, the older brother rejects his younger brother, that he doesn't even accept him as his brother, and that he says, "This is your son." That he puts a distance and a separation between himself and the father, saying that this isn't my family, that I have no part of this brother, and that his actions has caused me to reject him. And so, in a little bit, we'll be talking about some of the takeaways, and this is one of the very important things to note about the older brother, and the younger brother, is the equal state of lostness that these two brothers are in. But before we get there, we'll look at the father and how he reacts to this older brother. In verse 28, again, we see the fact that the father came out and entreated him. Again, the father didn't wait around like with the younger brother. He did not wait for him to come to him. He went out and actively pursued the younger brother. We see this, as we talked about with the image of the painting by Michelangelo, this sense that God is reaching out to us and that he is wanting us to come back. It's not just if they choose to. God wants for those of us who are lost and those who are lost to see that and to come back. He doesn't want anyone to be lost. We see this in this desire for the older brother to also be a part of the family, that it doesn't matter, younger brother, older brother, he wants both brothers to be a part of the family. In verse 31, the first thing that the father tells to the younger, to the older brother, is that he said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours." And that's a very true statement in the sense that with the splitting of property, before the father had received the younger brother back into the family, the two-thirds that was left over was the older brother's. That there is a cost to the older brother by his father receiving his younger brother back in. As I mentioned earlier, the fact that now that the father has received this younger brother as a member of the family and not just as a servant, the two-thirds that was left over from the split before is now going to be split again, two-thirds, one-third. So there is a cost to the older brother, and while we may not see the same things in our own lives, but we do in our lives with our interactions with our brothers and sisters, we do see this to an extent in the fact that with sin, while someone may sin against us and we forgive them, there still is consequences that can't be avoided. There will be cost, and there will be a setting aside of pride that must be taken on our part when we deal with these kinds of situations. But at the end of the day, we can't allow for this price to get in the way of our service to God. And then the second thing that the father tells to the older brother is in verse 32, saying, "It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found." So we see a very similar thing that was said in verse 24 of the fact that this brother is now received, and that should have been enough cause for the older brother to celebrate. And this should have been an exciting thing. This should have meant it had been a very happy time, but yet the older brother allowed for things to get in the way of that. And so as we look at some of the takeaways that we can take from this parable of the two brothers, I'd like to first look at what actually separated the brothers from the father. The first is the equal state of lostness that we have here with these brothers. What I mean by that is that both of these sons wanted the goods, the rewards, the riches of the father, but not the father himself, not the father and his love. They went about it very differently, though. And the younger brother, he asked for these things from the father, and he left. That he put this distance between them. That he left. He asked for it, as you see in verse 12. And then the older brother, while he didn't necessarily come out and say these things, while he was serving his father, he served his father with a selfish ambition for the rewards that he was going to get. And we see that in verse 29. So the next takeaway that we have stemming from this is looking into what actually separated the brothers from the father. The younger brother, what separated him would be the fact that he ran away, that he got away as far as he could. We see this example in the Old Testament in Jonah, that Jonah, whenever he knew he was going to be disobeying God, that he tried to get as far away from what God was wanting him to do as he could by getting on the ship. That when we look at younger brothers, that oftentimes there's no difference between them and the older, but the fact is that they're the ones who are causing this, that the younger brothers are the ones who they have done things or they have put this distance between themselves and God, and that is what they have to overcome when it comes to them coming back to God, is the distance that they have put by themselves. The older brothers in this parable is separated by his pride in his own moral record, that he has this extreme amount of pride in what he has done as a brother, as a son to the father, in that if you look at it, it's not just the sins that he has in his life. The things that we can take away into our life is it's not just the sin with these older brothers that separate them. In this parable, we see the fact that this younger brother had been forgiven of what we would consider great sins, that we're not supposed to put ranking on sin, but however, we would have seen this as a terrible thing that this younger brother would have done. And this older brother had just seen his father forgive him of everything. So we can't say that it's the fact that the pride what the older brother has said to his father is what separates him. But again, it's himself. It just displays itself differently because it's the pride in his own moral record and what he has done truly is what separates him, is that he can't get over the fact of the way he is serving God through is his selfish ambition. So because of this, we see this very dangerous situation with the older brother. With the parable, we've had the continuity and the repetition of something being lost, something being found, and then there's rejoicing over it. You see that three times with the sheep, the coin, and the younger brother, but here we have something that's not the same. And the fact that with this older brother, we aren't told whether he enters into the feast or not. That he is left, for all we know, he is left out. And this would have been a huge, huge sign to those he was speaking to, that he was speaking to these older brothers, the tax collectors, and the Pharisees and the scribes. That he was speaking to these people in this parable, and that he left their state in a unknown conclusion to try and wake them up. That it was a plea to them to see the error in their way. And because of this, I guess we can title this older brother syndrome. And so the next thing I'd like to look at is how we can see this older brother syndrome in the church and also in our own lives. And I know when I studied for this that I saw areas where constantly, I know we can all constantly improve, but I know definitely I saw this within myself, and that it really was an eye-opening thing about making sure that our service to God is for the right reasons. We talked about it in the class and how the Israelites, their service to God, that they kept complaining and grumbling about all these things when they were forgetting why they were in the place they were to begin with, and the fact that God had delivered them from the Egyptians. So the first way that we can help identify this is we see this older brother syndrome displayed in someone who, when life doesn't go the way they wanted it, in response, they become bitter. And what I mean by that is that people, as they go through life, unfortunately, bad things happen. And those people who, when bad things happen, they turn bitter and they become upset and they start blaming people, especially start blaming God, they are unwilling to serve God how we're supposed to be, in that whenever we talked about in Corinthians that when we are weak, we are strong, that there are going to be times like that in our service to God. And the proper faith and a strong faith is one that does not blame that on other people, but accepts the fact that this is a part of my service to God, and that in spite of this, I will continue to serve God in a way that's proper. The next way that this is displayed is a strong sense of superiority. And so what I mean by that is people placing too much emphasis on a image, a self-image, and self-described image of being more holy than you, being less sinful than you. And it's a very, I like to call it a competitive comparison, that we do this a lot of times. And if you would turn to Psalm 73, and I'm going to go ahead and read from here. But we see the writer of this psalm, he even fell into a trap of this competitive comparison and looking around us, in that getting too concerned about what someone next to us or what our brother or sister is doing beside us. And so beginning in verse 1, "Truly God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. But as for me, my feet had almost stumbled. My steps had nearly slipped. For I was envious of the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. For they have no pangs until death. Their bodies are fat and sleek. They are not in trouble as others are. They are not stricken like the rest of mankind. Therefore pride is their necklace. Violence covers them as a garment. Their eyes swell out through fatness. Their hearts overflow with follies. They scoff and speak with malice. Loftily they threaten oppression. They set their mouths against the heavens, and their tongue struts through the earth. Therefore his people turn back to them, and they find no fault in them. And they say, how can God know? Is there knowledge in the Most High? Behold, these are the wicked, always at ease. They increase in riches. All in vain have I kept my heart clean and washed my hands in innocence. For all the day long I have been stricken and rebuked every morning. If I had said, I will speak thus, I would have betrayed the generation of your children." And so we see here the writer of this psalm got entangled and tripped up when he looked around at the world. And we see this in our own lives, that people who are living in the world and have are doing pretty much whatever they want, we don't see this, self-control and these emotions of they don't have a care, that they don't mind whatever happens, and that oftentimes they're happy. They have lots of money and things are going right for them. However, we'll continue in verse 16 and we'll see the response that we're supposed to have as Christians. But these older brothers, they get caught up in this and they see all this happening around them and they're unwilling to move past it. So in verse 16, in response to this, the writer says, "But when I thought how to understand this, it seemed to me a wearisome task until I went to the sanctuary of God. Then I discerned their end. Truly you set them up in slippery places. You make them fall to ruin. How they are destroyed in a moment, swept away utterly by terrors. Like a dream when one wakes, O Lord, when you rouse yourself, you despise them as phantoms. When my soul was embittered, when I was pricked in heart, I was brutish and ignorant, I was like a beast toward you. Nevertheless, I am continually with you. You hold my right hand. You guide me with your counsel, and afterward you will receive me to glory. Whom have I in heaven but you? And there is nothing on earth that I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. For behold, those who are far from you shall perish. You put an end to everyone who is unfaithful to you. But for me it is good to be near God. I have made the Lord God my refuge, that I may tell of all your works. That this truly is the attitude that we have to have, in that when we understand the fact that it doesn't matter what's going on around us in our lives, that our service to God and faithful service to Him will result in the reward that is coming to us. The next sign of the older brother syndrome is an unforgiving judgmental spirit. This is best displayed by the parable of the unforgiving servant, and that he was unwilling to accept the loss that he was going to have after being forgiven the cost that had been forgiven to him. Also, the parable of the workers in the field, who some began working early in the morning and others began later in the afternoon, and some even only a few hours before sunset, and at the end of the day they were all paid the same wage. That those who worked in the early hours, they were upset because of the fact that those who worked later on in the evening were given the same amount of reward. And I hope I'm not breaking new news to everybody, but heaven is going to be the same for everyone who's able to enter it. That there's no different levels, that because you've served longer or anything like that, there's no status level. That the main fact about being in heaven is that we're there in front of God and being able to serve Him. And the last sign of this older brother syndrome is a joyless, fear-based compliance to God's word. And what I mean by that, in 1 John chapter 4, and verse 17, it says that by this love perfected with us, so that we may have confidence for the days of judgment. Because as He is, so also are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. For fear has to do with punishment, and whoever fears has not been perfected in love. We love because He first loved us. That this is, as we mature as Christians, when we first begin out, I can remember the moment that I realized I needed to be baptized. I think we were at the house, and it was a summer day. And all of a sudden, it was a Wednesday night, and I was like, I need to be baptized. I've realized the fact that I am in sin, and if I were to die right now, that I would have to face judgment knowing that I hadn't done the right thing. And so we didn't wait till, luckily my parents had good phone numbers and have great people at Cy Fair, and we got there before services, and so we actually had to go back. We went there, and then we went back home, and then we went to services again. That in that moment, there's this fear that we have. And that there was a fear you had whenever you first realized that you need to be baptized. And that was the initial motivator and what caused you to push to make that choice in baptism. But as we mature as Christians, it's supposed to go away. That the older brother and these older brothers, they serve God because they're afraid of the punishment. Rather than serving God for the proper reasons and the fact that they have seen how much He has done for them, it's about, I don't want to X, or I'm doing this because I want Y. That this misguided and misaimed point of their faith causes them to miss the point, and that they miss why they're serving God. So as we have come full circle, I said that I'd mention again these two definitions of prodigal. And the first being recklessly extravagant. And we see that in the younger brother, and that's why he's often referred to as the prodigal son. However, it is also worthy to note the fact of the father in this being prodigal, and that he has spent everything. And so I would like to leave you with three verses, the first being John 3:16, then the lesson will be yours. John 3:16, "For God so loved the world that He gave up His only begotten Son, that whoever believes in Him should not perish but have everlasting life." Romans 5, verses 6 through 8, "For when we were still without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly. For scarcely for a righteous man will one die, yet perhaps for a good man someone would even dare to die. But God demonstrates His own love towards us, and that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." And finally, Romans 6, verses 1 and 2. "What shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Certainly not. How shall we who died to sin live any longer in it? Whether you are an older brother or a younger brother, as you look into your life, God has already spent everything to restore you, and the fact that He sent His Son to die on the cross for our sins. So as it says in Romans chapter 6, what should we do then? Shall we continue to live in sin? Let that not be the case for anyone here. If anyone has any need, we now offer an invitation and opportunity to make a change in your life, and you can come.